Hello, and welcome to the wonderful world of podcasts. I am your guide. People call me the Podcast Professor. I am Professor Sam, and I have here with me my lovely assistant. Would you like to make your way in, assistant? What is your name?
My name is David.
Oh my goodness, David. I definitely knew that myself. It's good to have you here. God, there is no way I'm keeping that voice up for the whole episode. Hello, welcome to Gamer Era, where the intros get more and more chaotic by the day. How are we doing today, David?
How are we doing? Well, you know, I got a fever, and the only cure is playing some stuff. And I did that. I started playing X-Men Legends for the GameCube. Because I've been on an X-Men kick recently. Mm. So I was like, you know, I might as well, you know, continue that. And yeah, I played through the first mission. It's X-Men Legends, you know? What else do you want to say other than, you know, it's the X-Men. But I also played, I don't want to step on the toes of where we're going, but I also played, similar to like last week when you played, you know, James Bond. Mm. And, you know, there wasn't enough to talk about. I played Pokemon Rumble World, 3DS, free-to-play, microtransactions, repetitive gameplay, did not enjoy fully, did not really care either way, to be honest. I played, like, enough to be like, you know, there's nothing really to talk about here, other than, you know, you just kind of hit the A button a lot to hit things, and that's about it. But that's about all I've been playing, because, like, as I said, everything else I've been playing has been, like, I've gotten really into, like, prep work.
Yeah, so I've been seeing.
I've gotten into the idea of being prepared, which is incredible. So half the stuff is just, like, you know, it's off to one side until we get further. But what about you?
Fairly, like, quiet week. It was only, like, the last couple days that I, picked things up on the playing front, because I was doing a lot of research. Yeah, I played a little bit of Yo-Kai Watch earlier in the week, which was one of the games I picked up when, like, Argos were doing a big clear out sale back in 2020. I think I've talked with you about this before. They just their entire, like, warehouse of 3DS games, they were just, like, flogging for pennies, essentially. Yo-Kai Watch in particular was £1. And it's just sort of sat on my shelf for a while. But yeah, I played a little bit of it as part of the prep for this week. And it seems pretty all right. It's obviously very, like, kid-focused, like, even more so than most core Pokemon games. The main thing I've enjoyed about it so far is that the yokai definitely feel more like sort of friends or mentors than they do pets. They all speak English. Some of them have very strange voices as well. There's like, I'm trying to remember which one it was. One of them had a very specific, that, like, definitely aping some kind of, like, monster movie actor from, like, the 50s or something. Mm-hmm. The name escapes me, though. They sounded a bit like the yes guy from The Simpsons, who I think is referencing someone from Sanford and Son or something. So that's the sort of extent to where they're going with how they characterize them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Pokemon clone in some ways, but most of the idea is based on this, like, Japanese mythological idea of yokai, which is, I'll get onto in the main segment, but they're basically these, like, creatures that you can find anywhere. So part of the encounter mechanic is you sort of, like, look under trucks and under vending machines and, like, up in trees and stuff, and you see if you can find them sort of hidden in plain sight, which I think is quite fun. I always like the idea of sort of finding, like, invisible creatures that are, like, beyond the naked eye. It has a, like, couple other sort of gimmicks as well. Like, it has, like, a battle system where everyone's on, like, they're on, like, six axes of a wheel, and you can have three at the front, and then you can kind of, like, rotate them to have any three be attacking at a time. It kind of reminds me of that rotation battle system that they had in Pokemon Black that they only had in that game and never came back. I think probably because it felt weirdly complicated. But yeah, I only played about like an hour and a half of it, but it, like, it seemed perfectly fine. The main thing that I wanted to talk about was Pokemon Legends Arceus, because I've been sitting on wanting to play it for a while, but it just sort of never felt like the time was right. Like when it came out, I believe they announced Scarlet and Violet like a month later. It was, and it was in a weird position as well, because it had been a couple of years after Sword and Shield had come out, and the discourse mill had churned quite thoroughly through that game. It had the DLC that came out. Some people were like, oh, this redeems it. And some people were like, this is just like, this is nice wallpaper on a moldy wall. I watched my friend playing Sword when that was new, and that was a pretty deflating experience, especially because it was like, it hurt extra bad because the region was inspired by the UK. So it's not fun. I kind of know how the folks in like France felt when X and Y came out and was pretty thoroughly mid. it was just a Pokemon is a series. I always say this to people, but it's like, even on the original Game Boy, that series was always built in a very antiquated way, and it always felt, at least from how I understand it, it always was sort of built like a bit of a throwback, even in its era. Mm-hmm. And it just, even though they rebuild the games and they change stuff, some stuff gets ported over, but it's usually a different framework for each gen. Like, there are just things where it feels like they're just stuck in a way that the series has to be. And it's even just like little things, like you walk into a wall and it makes the same like doo sound, which just feels odd. Everyone always like snaps in and out of animations. There was a lot of examples in Sword of like Pokemon just sort of, and characters just swiveling on the spot rather than like actually turning around. And I get that you can't do like a distinct animation for everyone, but when it's an in-game cutscene and that's the only Pokemon that's ever going to appear in that scene, it's like, why are they spinning on the spot? Like, this is the legendary, like you should be able to actually see them turn. And then there was all the other stuff, like the big wild area that was quite empty. It wasn't a looker either. There was that weeks-long discourse about the very low poly tree, which did genuinely look like it had just come out of Ocarina. Like, people got fixated on that for a very long time, probably too long, but it was also, like, valid. Like, some people were like, no, it looks fine. I'm like, don't know about that tree, man. So I picked up Legends Arceus recently, and I thought talking about it on the cast would be a good reason to do so. One of the things I found really refreshing, like right off the bat, is that there are NPCs that are like a bit hostile, because the whole sort of thing in this game is that you've sort of fallen into this bygone era. You've fallen in from our present, like back into the past. So everyone's like, oh, who's this outsider? Like, do they want to infiltrate our camp? Are they a spy? And everyone's also quite fearful of Pokemon, because the whole idea of catching them is quite new in this world. I don't know. I don't think you said you hadn't played Legends. I don't know if you've been curious about it at all.
It came out when I wasn't really like paying attention to games as much as I had been before.
Yeah.
And I had like kind of fallen off the Pokemon kind of, not so much bandwagon, but like the Pokemon bus, as it were, because
yeah,
I had played Sun, and I was like, I don't really enjoy this. This is like kind of both like a bit too similar and a bit too much of a departure. So I wasn't really like, you know, when it came out, I was like, oh, looks fine. I don't know. I won't play it. And then during the novel coronavirus pandemic, I don't know why I like calling it, its full name. I don't know why. I picked up Sword, and
yeah,
that kind of like,
yeah,
that turned me off even more, because I was like, this is just like, if this is what this is like, then, you know, obviously Legends gonna have to be quite similar, especially like that wild area, because to me, like, when you see that all the trailers are like Legends, like, it feels like the big selling point is you get to go into this big like area, and like, you know, it's like a pseudo open world area where you can go around, you can catch, you know, whatever you want. and having played Sword and having gone to the world area where, like, you know,
yeah,
it is literally just like a vast emptiness. I was like, this is, like, they're not gonna be able to, like, you know, thread that needle. So I just kind of wrote off playing it at all. But I did play Violet afterwards.
Oh, interesting.
Or just Scarlet. I played, no, Scarlet is what I played. And I enjoyed Scarlet, even though, you know, Scarlet is another game where, like, it's plagued by, like, you know, so much technical problems, I guess. But, like, I don't know. I just never really felt like going back and picking up Legends at that point.
Again, it released in a weird period. It's just so strange that they did basically two mainline games in the same year that were part of different generations. Also going for, like, slightly different directions, because from what I've seen about Scarlet and Violet, it's like that goes for the open world concept more and seems to deliver on it.
I don't know. It kind of does, and then it's still very much like, you know, you should probably do this bit of the game first, but, like, you know, if you want to go there, you can go there, but we would recommend you go in, like, this direction.
Yeah,
do this gym first, you know.
Yeah, I again, like you said, like, a lot of my friends reported back quite positively about the game, but the technical issues were the big holdback, and that was what had been holding me back from Arceus as well, because I remember that came out and people were like, ooh, the frame rate's not amazing, it doesn't look great, and yada yada. I haven't had too many issues so far, and I don't know if that's because I'm still quite early on, or it's been patched, or it's like a mixture of both. But it does feel quite refreshing so far. It's funny that you mention not being especially compelled by Sun, because I played Moon when that was new, and I was having a good time with it, but I think what eventually killed that game for me was, like, the saturation of cutscenes. And they're not especially interesting cutscenes either. It's just long dialogue boxes and people walking back and forth slowly and gesturing at a Pokemon that's doing an idle pose. I remember dropping it. I must have been in the final stretch of the game. Because I remember it's like I go to some island of trials, but it's like I get to this island and it's like, Hal wants to talk to me for, like, 3 minutes, and then I walk a few feet, and then it's like the daughter, Lusamine or whatever, like, she wants to talk to me more, and then, like, all the shopkeepers want to have their piece, and it's especially for a handheld game, it's just like, come on, man, I want to play more of the game, man. I'm not connecting with this. That's rough. It's like I was really enjoying Moon for that first half, two thirds, and I was almost like, oh, this might be my new favorite. And then I think it just hit a saturation point, the sheer amount of cutscenes. So I'm really hoping that doesn't happen with this game, because I'm getting similar feelings. It feels similarly refreshing. It's like quasi real time. I'll probably talk more about it, like, when I get further in, but, like, the pitch people were giving was that it was like Monster Hunter, the way that the open world works. So you have open areas, but they're quite small and self-contained. And then you go between those and you have your little encounters, which did put me off a little bit, because I played a bit of Monster Hunter. I really tried to get into Rise. I clocked about 50 hours in that game. I had a decent time of it as, like, a social experience, but I think I just, in the end, I was just like, I don't know, it's not quite, like, tangible for me. I've tried to give Monster Hunter a go so many times over the years, and I think I just have to accept that it's not really for me.
Mm-hmm.
But this has been fun so far. I think I'll have more to say about it later, if you can believe it. But, yeah, no, good time so far. Good time so far.
Interesting, you're talking about, you know, it being kind of like a departure and kind of refreshing. Because, like, to me, and this is going to lead into what I'm going to talk about, to me, like, the big spin-off before this was Pokemon Ranger, which kind of, like, positions itself as, like, you know, if you want, like, a different Pokemon experience on a handheld, here you go, you know? This is a game that is positioning itself as a departure, but it is fundamentally the same thing. And that is probably my biggest issue. I'm really, like, I don't know what it is about Pokemon Ranger that has me stumped. Do you know who developed Pokemon Ranger?
I don't off the top of my head.
It was HAL Laboratory and Creatures Inc. together.
I didn't realize HAL were involved. That's interesting.
This is HAL. This is HAL in between Kirby Canvas Curse, Kirby Squeak Squad.
Yeah.
And then after that, Kirby Superstar Ultra, Picross 3D.
Yeah.
And of course, then they were like, you know, they're like in the big soup that was, you know, working on Brawl for a while. And then Creatures is obviously, you know, Pokemon. But like, so they develop, and then there's like two sequels, which I've never played and don't really plan on playing. That Creatures kind of took over themselves, so HAL gets like put to one side, you know. So I don't know if you've ever played Pokemon Ranger, and if you have any like thoughts or feelings towards its general kind of existence beyond apathy.
I never touched it. It exists, I believe, in that weird liminal space where Gen 4 wasn't out, so they were still doing like sort of Gen 3 games on DS. You had like Mystery Dungeon, which had like dual versions. There's obviously Pokemon Dash, which is horrific from what I heard, like probably one of the worst Pokemon spin-offs, where you're just rubbing on the screen as fast as possible to make a Pokemon run around a track. What else was there around Ranger's time? Maybe that was it. I can't think of anything else off the top of my head. Maybe like Troze or something.
Yeah, I think Troze was in there as well, because it is very much like it is very Gen 3 heavy.
Yeah,
and it's funny you say that, like Pokemon Dash is about like rubbing the screen as hard as you can. This game is a touchscreen breaker.
Yeah.
The mechanic obviously is, like, you know, you draw circles around, like, it, you're a Pokemon Ranger, you're a rookie Pokemon Ranger.
Yeah.
Stop me if this sounds familiar to you. You're a rookie Pokemon person, and you're starting off in your quest, and every time you beat a boss, because this is an evil team trying to kidnap Pokemon.
Yeah.
Every time you beat a boss, you gain a rank or a badge of some kind until you reach the end of the game, where you take on the big boss who has legendaries. Does this sound familiar? Because it is. It is. It was Pokemon.
It sounds exactly the whole, same.
It is. Like, the whole mechanic is you basically, like, you walk into a wall Pokemon and you have to draw a circle around them a certain amount of time. So, like, you know, there's Pokemon is it Swinub? I'm trying to think. Might be Swinub. I don't know. There's some Pokemon where, like, you just draw one circle around them and they're done. There's Pokemon like Pikachu where you draw two circles around them and they're done. And then there's one, this like Pokemon like, I think Charizard is like 20 or something. There's like ones that are like a really high levels of, you know, circle stuff. But like the whole thing is that, like, you are a Pokemon Ranger and you have to the early levels of the game are interminable, because it's the same thing like you were saying with, you know, Sun and Moon, where like it's like all this dialogue and all this stuff. Whereas here, it's like, you know, you talk to someone and then it's like 3 minutes of just hitting A as they go to like different dialogue boxes, like, you know, again and again and again. And then like it's, as a tutorial, it's like the first, three chapters of the game are like, you know, you have to go and like help someone move a box, or you have to go into like the sewers and clear out all this like Grimer stuff that like the Grimers have like infested the sewers.
Yeah.
Or you have to go to a forest and find a Spearow, or you have to like find 6 skitties that have like scattered among the city's population. It's all this stuff where like you're just like walking from like A to B really slowly, because you can't, like, you know, there's no run button. It's just like you're walking, and you're like circling, and you're walking here and you're circling, and it's like that again and again and again. This game, it's one of those things where like this game is like it's presented as like, you know, an alternative to the mainline games, because like this game it keeps this kind of stop starting you to try, because it's trying to figure out like what it is as a game.
Yeah.
This, like, I want to talk about like, one of the issues. Like, this is all over the place, because like this game really, like, I could not muster up a lot of enthusiasm to like delve into it.
It does seem, yeah, I think that was part of why I didn't play it, was because it seemed like it was kind of thrown together. I think it seems like they built it from the concept first, because the whole thing is you're like drawing circles around the Pokemon, and it's like, well, you're a ranger, it's like you're throwing a lasso, right? So I'm imagining something that's this like sort of quite intense action. To me, it sounds like it's just sort of like repetitive strain injury.
It is. My hand is genuinely like my kind of pinky finger has never been so sore in my life. I'm like trying to
hold
this
bonkers.
And that's like, that's the whole thing with this game. This game is like not fun.
Yeah.
And like it's being pitched as like a you know, here's like a stopgap or like a departure for you to enjoy, you know, a different experience.
Yeah.
And it's just convoluted and boring and like frustrating to play.
Yeah.
At any point.
It sounds frustrating. I think it's like, as you were describing it, I could see how it's the kind of thing that they'd pitch and I think they could get really excited about, because it sounds like it's putting more energy into the capture of Pokemon. Because in a regular Pokemon game, you press a button, you throw the ball, you catch them. I guess this is their way of being like, well, what if we, you know, we add something visceral to it, something that like almost gets the blood pumping. So you've got this like repetitive circling motion. But when you were describing the whole thing where, you know, you can't just like circle Pokemon like that, that's okay for like a little like mini game or a little diversion, but if that's the main gameplay, there needs to be more to it. It is interesting that that's them trying to turn catching into a novel thing, because it's something that I don't think they really tried again until Go, and that got it down. And I think that was relatively simple as well. That was just a timing mechanic, and it had the little visceral spinning motion, and you could, you know, you could do some curve on the ball or whatever, or you could throw it more straight and more accurate. Maybe they just focused in on that too much, I think.
It's a very like, I think the problem with the game as well is that it's fairly drawn out, because I think they really want like you to basically get used to the mechanic, you know, of, you know, circle, lift up this, because if you don't have the status at like the right time, if you like, because you can keep like circling them and get more XP and stuff, but if you too early, it breaks the cycle. If you lift up too late, it breaks the cycle. So I think like it's so drawn out, like just give you like time to acclimatize, but as a result, it's just so, it's like so tedious and so annoying to like go through this tutorial section where like it's really like it's holding your hand, and it's like really like, you know, there's like some really, really silly stuff as well where like it tells you like, okay, you know, this like you'll go to like an early part of the game and like your boss will be like, I'll talk to this guy, can you step aside and do your rounds? And like there's no like your rounds, like you could talk like two people in town, and like they're just a like, casual NPCs, like they don't tell you anything like about the plot or anything. So it's like just you to like leave the building and come back into the building, and then like the game will start again. It's like stuff like that where like it's just like, you know, there's like it's like trying to add like maybe a bit of character and life to like the story, but like it's just, it seems a bit kind of cheap. It's not an enjoyable experience, and it's not like terrible, like, you know, I can't say like I didn't find myself being like kind of dragged in at times to be like, you know, oh, I'll just play this level again, and I'll save, or actually I might play another level again.
What do you think it was that was like, really, like driving this almost feels like a therapy session. What do you think it was that was driving you to continue playing even though the game was being evil and harming you? But I am curious. I don't know, does it have interesting characters, or like is the aesthetic nice?
It doesn't.
Oh, God. Okay.
Actually, it does look nice. I'll give it that. It looks like, because it like visually it's a departure as well, because it's like full body, like it's not even the sprites.
Yeah,
well, it's sprites, but it's not like, you know, the Pokemon sprites of like, you know, this tiny guy with a tiny head and tiny hands.
Yeah,
it's like a full body, like you run around and stuff.
Yeah,
and like it, like the overall, like it looks like visually it's a really nice looking game. Part of it was like I realized like, you know, because I was gonna stop playing, and then I was like, I'm so close to the end, I might as well, you know, try and beat it. And then I got to that last bit, and I was like, I'm not gonna try and beat this.
Oh my god, I didn't realize it was that short as well.
It is.
Or were you just playing it a lot?
Oh, it's deceptively kind of short. Because like you get through like the tutorial, and then you do like the first like three or four levels, and then before you know it, like you're in the end game. But it's just like, I think I just kind of felt compelled to try and finish it at some point. You know, like the kind of sunken cost fallacy of like, you know,
yeah, I put so maybe much that into was this. It.
I gotta sit through more things of like, because there's some Pokemon that like won't leave you alone, and like there's like a bit where like I was walking along, just like walking along, and this one Pokemon kept attacking me even though I was like trying to avoid it, and I was like, because to run away from them as well, you'd like circle them once and then let you run away if you want to.
Oh my god! Yeah, why?
It
all comes back to the circle.
You gotta circle.
It's like that could have been a button.
the circle is important to what we're trying to do here. It's just one of those games I think will, you know, unless, because I know they went to the Wii U Virtual Console, unless like, you know, there's like a DS. Nintendo Switch Online window, I think, like, let's fall to the wayside of, like, you know, the obscure channels of Pokemon history. But yeah, that's my not strong not my finest hour, but that was Pokemon Ranger.
Gosh,
rip Pokemon Ranger. I hardly knew her. Yeah.
Worth every minute. It's fun that you talk about Pokemon Ranger, because much like a ranger, I've prowled the prairies, and I've looked over the distant lands, and I've found some influences on Pokemon. So part of why I'd been playing Yo-Kai Watch as well, as I sort of alluded to earlier, was I'd always heard this sort of thing where Pokemon are inspired by Yo-Kai, which is the sort of Japanese legend. It's in other parts of Asia as well, but I'm focusing mostly on like the Japanese side of it, because that directly relates to the development of the Pokemon games. Mm-hmm. And I'd always been curious about it, so I figured this would be a good opportunity to do some research. So like, yokai are a general term for like quite a few things. Like, you might have heard of the kitsune before, which is like sort of the fox spirit that like steals things. There's the kappa, the little like turtle guys that hang out near ponds, the tanuki, so on and so on. Like, a lot of these guys appear in Animal Crossing, which I always found like fun, because in some cases like yokai can be spirit guides and things. But beyond just being like monsters and spirits and stuff, they can also be like general explanations of the unexplainable. So it's like, if you've ever like looked up at the clouds and thought that you like saw like a strange image, or like saw a face and like the pattern of some wood, or you've like felt an unseen presence, like that's the kind of thing that like yokai would historically explain. It would be sort of, people would notice like sort of strange phenomena that they didn't have the means to explain, and they'd create like a mythos around it. There's quite a few different types of yokai. There's like kami, that are specifically spirits of the gods. There's tsukumogami, which are inanimate objects that have been like imbued of a spirit, usually stuff that's been like discarded or lost. There's obake, which are like shapeshifters. They usually turn into like animals or humans, and you know, they have duplicitous means in mind. Like, there's lots and lots of different types. They can also like all overlap and mix together and things. The actual definition of yokai is kind of interesting as well, because it's just a sort of combination of yo, which means attractive or like bewitching. In some contexts, it can also mean like calamity. And then kai, which is like a homonym for the Japanese word for image, but it can also mean like mystery or wonder. So yeah, the general theme of yokai is that they're just sort of like a fascinating thing that appears that like explains something that would otherwise go unexplained.
Mm-hmm.
So with regards to Pokemon, as I said, I did some research. I also made a few connections that I haven't seen elsewhere, which is fun, because like yokai in the English speaking world is still like territory that we're continuing to explore, because it's legends over several hundreds of years in Japan, but not all of them will have necessarily been translated or made their way over, or they might have been translated slightly oddly in the past and details have been changed around. So I went for some of the obvious ones first. So you've got Ninetales, the nine-tailed fox. Mm. That's directly based on the Yao no Kitsune, which is the eight-tailed fox. Obviously, the nine-tailed fox is something that I always think about when it comes to like Naruto, because that's the whole thing of that, that he's like cursed to have like the fox sealed in him, and then everyone just hates him for no reason. And that's why everyone connects to that series so much. There's Ponyta, which is a direct reference to the Kirin, which is literally just a horse with a mane of fire. So again, that's just like a direct transplantation. They just sort of cutified it a bit, and then we're like, yeah, sure, we'll go with the Kirin. Mm. The event in Gold and Silver, where you encounter the red shiny Gyarados in the lake, directly mirrors the legend of the Hosugyo. The name literally translates to like red phoenix fish. As with a lot of fish in like East Asian legends, they're sort of linked with like fortune and prosperity. And then Ho-Oh is directly named after the Ho-Oh, which is like a phoenix-like creature. It has feathers in five different colors to represent the five elements of nature. It sort of represents the balance of emotional being. This is one that's derived from a Chinese legend of the Feng Huang, which is loosely like the yin yang. Ho-Oh is also often like paired with the traditional Tatsu or Ryujin, which are like dragon gods, and that's reflected in the water dragon Lugia.
Mm-hmm.
I did find it like really interesting that it's outright just called Ho-Oh. It's one of those things. It's interesting looking into some of this stuff as well, because as I said, some of the yokai are like gods as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Ho-Oh is apparently one of the sort of the biggest ones up there. The Kirin is actually right at the top, and then like the Ho-Oh and then the Tatsu Dragon are sort of like side by side, and then you kind of go down the hierarchy from there. So then I went from like direct homages, and then I was like browsing the site, literally called yokai.com. I was also looking at the Great Yokai Encyclopedia on Amazon, which was like a bit here and there. Like there were like weird spelling errors and stuff, and there were some things I saw in there when I researched further. I was like, don't know about that. So mileage might vary on that one, but I sort of just looked through descriptions on there and then saw if there were any ones that like seemed familiar. One of the ones that jumped out to me first was Mawile, which is the little like yellow, like it looks like a little girl almost, like in a skirt,
mm-hmm, with the jaw.
with the big black jaw on the back of its head. That I believe is a reference to the Hutakuchi Onna, which literally translates to the two-mouthed lady. This is a human that's been cursed to have like a second mouth on the back of their head that they have to keep feeding. It like has an insatiable appetite, and it's usually like a curse that's been put on them because they've been greedy or they've like hoarded in their life. Girafarig as well. I was like, yeah, that's got to be a reference for sure. With the little like chain chomp tail.
Mm-hmm.
I always love that kind of thing. I feel like there's more Pokemon like that where they're sort of they have that like hidden like symbiote. I couldn't think of any at the time that I was doing it. I guess like maybe like Hydreigon, although that's more like a Hydra, I guess. Clues in the name.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's Whiskash and Stunfisk, who are the big sort of flat fish guys. Whiskash, I think, is the electric type, and Stunfisk is the one that like disguises itself as a Pokeball. They both take influence from the Jishin Namazu, which is like an earthquake fish. it's like a giant catfish that lives in the layers between like the earth and the sea, and it causes earthquakes. And I believe also inspired like the great Zapfish in Splatoon. There's also like a WarioWare minigame where like there's an electric catfish that you have to like connect to the city, and then it illuminates it. And nobody seems to have made the connection, but like it's one of those things that feels really specific. It doesn't feel like WarioWare just being weird. It's like this is reference to like a legend or something, surely.
Mm.
I couldn't find anything concrete, but like it seems like those might be connected. And then the last big like sort of influence and inspiration is of course Rotom and all its like forms, like the fridge and the fan and the oven that it inhabits, which is just like a classic example of the Tsukumogami, the like inanimate object given life. I thought it was so fun that they went beyond the like living object concept. They were like, well, let's actually like make the Pokemon itself the spirit, and then the different forms, the different like types that it can become, the different objects that it can have it. I kept a Rotom on my team like pretty strong through my Pokemon Black save file, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very versatile.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, just as a sidebar, it's like the whole Tsukumogami thing also goes for like any of the sort of object Pokemon that people have gone like insane about, like Klefki or Chandelure or Trubbish or Vanillux.
Yeah, or that cup of tea, that teacup that's like chipped.
Yes.
Yeah.
Spirity, I think. No, that's an indie game. I had it in my notes earlier, and I forgot what it was called. Oh no, that's gonna really bug me. Hang on. I think it was the one. I think it was in Gen 8.
Yes, Sinistee.
Sinistee, yes. But yeah, so those guys are fun. My friend that I consulted on a bunch of this research, Lucy, hi, you're probably listening. They pointed out to me that Shintoism in the Buddhist religion like teaches the philosophy of all beings and objects possessing a soul.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the sort of thing that like Marie Kondo evoked when she was doing the whole like spark joy, ask yourself if the object sparks joy, if it doesn't, let it out into the world, because if it's just sitting on a shelf, it's going to be miserable. So yeah, I find that fun looking back on it in that context, that it's based on like lost or abandoned objects. I like to think that my Evercade sitting in the drawer might get inhabited by a spirit one day and live once more. That's how I live with myself, knowing that it's just sitting there. I don't know what else it's going to do.
The ghost of Donut Dodo has haunted your...
Donut Dodo could be a yokai, to be fair. It's a very manic-looking sprite. But yeah, with all this in mind, I didn't want to just sort of make this like me recounting a bunch of facts. So I came up with a little game,
ooh,
which I call Yokai or Nokai. So I've been trying to think of a good way to summarize like sort of the rules for this. But essentially, I'm going to give you a bunch of descriptions one by one.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are real yokai. Some of them are things I've made up. You might spot a pattern in the things that I've made up. They haven't totally come from my imagination. They are based on things that aren't yokai. But yeah, I thought this would be sort of a fun way to like relay some more information, because I can very much see how my friend got so manically into these things, because they're just fascinating. And again, because they're an explanation for like almost everything, every sort of irrational fear somebody's had, or you know, just a phenomena that they thought they saw, or you know, I mean, a lot of people believe in these still as spirits as well, and that's like cool in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
But because so much of it's based on like human psychology, there's like, it's like Pokemon, there's yokai for pretty much everything.
I love that kind of aspect of folklore, to be honest, like the kind of creature side of things.
Yes. Yeah. You know, obviously the temptation of this sort of thing is to always try to like compare it to like what you know. I can't think of too many thing like cryptids or anything like that in English culture, at least.
There
might be some stuff in Irish, but
no offense to the British, but like all
here we go,
all the like of all the things that we could criticize you for, and there are many, like the biggest, like all your like mythological folklore creatures are those big cats, Like, it's always just like, there's a big dog or a big cat I saw on the road when I was driving one day, and that scared me to my core because it was just giant. And it's like, well, it's a big dog. I suppose Captain Tom probably is a cryptid as well. I don't know. cut that out. But yeah, no, it's always just big dogs and big cats. In terms of like Irish stuff, of course, I made a documentary about a real life cryptid. That I found out what the actual thing around it was, and we cracked that mystery. It's not available for streaming anymore because I'm embarrassed by it. But
oh no,
no, it's just I'm in 90% of it, and like I just don't like looking at myself. But there's stuff like there's one that always stands out to me. Like there is this thing in like. It's called Limerick. In like the 1400s or 1500s. I don't even know if it's real. I think it could just be like someone made this up. But it's like reading about like a story where like these two kids were like goofing around. Actually, it might be like the 1800s. They were goofing around. I think there's like train. I don't know if it's a train station because I don't think they had trains in the 1800s. David. They're goofing around somewhere anyway, and like they came across this like wolf, like a man's face, and the man told the thing was like, leave me alone, and then like, it ran off. But that's not important. What's important is I do well in this quiz.
Yes,
because if I don't, I need to regain some composure after the car crash of a Pokemon Ranger segment. So, I'm ready to win.
Okay. Yokai or no kai, here it comes. Okay, so your first description: a large pink and yellow spotted humanoid that is said to invade family homes on weekends and wreak havoc in the name of spreading joy. You sound quite sure of your answer, David.
Oh really? This will be Mr. Blobby. He's not a yokai, but he would qualify for cryptid status, I think, at this point.
Yes, that is in fact Mr. Blobby. So with that being said, there is a yokai with some similarities, which is the Haradashi, which literally translates to belly exposer, and that's sort of a human appearing thing. It's a little taller than a human, a little weirder looking, and it's known to visit people who are feeling like lonely in their homes, and it like raises up its robe, and it has like a really weird like goofy face, and it like sort of dances around. It's like a very benevolent yokai. It just like wants to have a good time.
Noel Edmund saw that and he was like, what if I did that, but instead of being jolly, he was an absolute prick who just knocked people over and screamed and then ran away.
The main thing that I took away from it was that the Haradashi can appear in the home, or it can appear in temples. I haven't heard any records of it being at the Bournemouth Pavilion, though. I will have to look into that. The records aren't especially good. Description number two: a hairy hand that emerges from a toilet seeking revenge for the owner it was liberated from.
Ooh. I think this. When I was a child, I got a book from the library called The Hairy Hands, which was about. It was about a disembodied pair of hairy hands that would belong to like a criminal who died on like a country road. Take me home, and it would like grab the steering wheel of cars that were driving and crash them, and it scared the life out of me. So I'm gonna go ahead and assume that the author saw this and was like, let's do two of them. I'm gonna say this is a yokai.
Yes, it is indeed a yokai. So this description matches the Kurote, which is just black hand. You'll hear a lot of, I'm including all the translations because I find it fun that a lot of them are just like very literal. It's like, oh, I saw that thing. And I'm literally gonna describe it by what it is. There's a lot of yokai linked to toilets. I was originally going to make a no-kai that was like skibbity toilet, but I like I couldn't come up with a description that like was like vague enough to be like plausible, but like didn't just sound like an actual yokai. I was like, oh, an apparition of a face that rises from a toilet. And then I saw that there was like, that there's like ones that were like, you know, they peep on people in the bathroom and stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, skibbity toilet had to go, I'm afraid. But I will say that one of the more like grisly I found is something called the Akamanto, which is just like the red cape. And apparently it would like call out to you from the stall next to you. And it would be like, oh, do you want red paper or do you want purple paper? And if you say red paper, it like shreds the skin on your back. That it like hangs loose and all the blood comes out. Yeah, I know, very bloody.
Mm.
If you say blue paper or purple paper, it just like strangles you till you choke and then you turn blue. So it's just like trick question. It's just like choose the way you want to die. And like I was looking into the legend and it was like you can tell that like people were getting like exasperated by like kids asking them like, oh, but what if I say I want white paper? And it's like, take your skeleton out. And then it's like, what if I say I don't need paper? It's like, well, put you in the toilet.
It'll make you shit yourself.
It's like, yeah. But the thing that was fun was that obviously the combination of like asking for the paper and the hand in the toilet was something that they'd use in Zelda. Majora's Mask, there's a hand that comes out of one of the toilets in the hotel and it like just asks for paper. You can give it, there's a bunch of like different pieces of paper you get through the game. You get like a couple map deeds that you like trade around to get Deku scrubs to like move between towns. You can also give it a crucial item in the like cafe in Anju side quest, which is like, I don't know if you're aware of this, it's like the longest side quest in the game. It takes the entire 3-day cycle. You have to like be in very specific places at specific times. But you could just abort it midway through by just giving away like a very important letter that one of the characters is like heartfeltly written to the other that he just uses a toilet paper and gives you a piece of heart for. There was also like, it showed up in a few other games. It was in like the Oracle games, and there was one in like Skyward Sword that had like a love letter it was sending or something. But yeah, toilet yokai, very, very common. Okay, number 3. A rabbit that lives on the moon and pounds mochi.
See, because it sounds so specific to something that is in my head, but I don't know if it's in my head because it just sounds so specific. Squidward noises. See, if I risk it, then I risk my streak. But if I don't risk it, then I risk my streak. You know what? I'm gonna say something. I'm gonna say this is a yokai.
Ooh, no! It is in fact a yokai. It's a tricky one because this is one of those cases where it's not like a it's one of those descriptions of phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mentioned with the cloud thing earlier. The yokai itself is called the like Yukuto, which is like jade rabbit, and it's essentially like in parts of East Asia, if you look at the moon from that position, you can kind of see the crater formations look like the silhouette of like a rabbit with like a pestle, a mortar and like a pressing board, like pounding out mochi. It's just sort of like one of those ones where it's like, it doesn't have malicious intent. It's just like people saw something in the sky and then their imaginations kind of ran wild and they created this legend around it. The association's very common in like Japanese media. It shows up all over the place. Like rabbits and the moon get linked, and then the whole mochi thing. Or sometimes you'll see, you know, rabbits with mallets and stuff like that. The most recent example, or one of the most recent prominent examples, is like the whole final act of Mario Odyssey, where you're fighting rabbits through the whole game and collecting moons, and then eventually you go to the moon and you're fighting the rabbits there as well.
Mm-hmm.
They very like deftly combine the two in a way that I found was quite fun. Okay, description number 4. A small bear-like creature in human clothes that can be warded away by the color orange.
Well, this is just Paddington Bear. So,
it's Paddington Bear! Damn it! Okay, no, that's good. That's good that you got it, but damn it. yes, it's Paddington Bear. I was hoping that just saying, oh, the color orange would throw you off, but no. I couldn't find any yokai matching the specific criteria, but there are a lot of instances of the bear-like tanuki, sort of as I alluded to earlier, of the Animal Crossing Association.
Pompoko, great movie. Tanuki are in that.
Yes.
Yeah, he makes a ball sack parachute.
Yep, I was going to mention one of the most prominent is the Kino Tanuki, which is silk tanuki, which is like silk products quite literally sprung to life. It's like the name's like a multi-layered pun. Most of it is like linking the sort of natural behavior of tanuki, like rolling on their backs and like pounding their belly like a drum. And people kind of linked that to how silk would be kind of pounded out. The silk association is also because there's the belief that tanuki have gigantic ball sacks and people imagine them it like stretching out its scrotum like a sheet of silk. So, yep, there you go. Always a fun one to bring up. I one of my favorite, I go back and forth about whether I like it, but one of my favorite sort of old things I remember hearing about when I first heard about tanuki was the whole thing where like, oh, Tom Nook's got that like apron around his waist because he's packing down there. There's business going on, which is, yeah, he dresses up nice now, but we know your secret, Tom. Okay, number five, a raven that can shapeshift into human form, appearing to children when they are ready to assume its rites of passage.
No, okay, so here's the thing. This is the problem. This sounds incredibly like the premise to CBBC game show The Raven, but it also sounds like something that is particularly folkloric. The problem again is that I guess one, it's wrong, and I don't want to be wrong, but I'm going to go on a limb here, okay? Because this could be just another thing of like, you know, legends crossing over, inspiring things. I'm going to go ahead and say this is Nokai, and it is the CBB show The Raven.
Yes.
It is. Okay, phew.
Yeah, it is. I know, I got more tricky with them as I went on. There aren't like trick questions. I very specifically chose the things that I did because I didn't want to risk, like, if I show something from Japanese pop culture and then I later found out it actually was based on a yokai, mm-hmm. it might have got, you know, it wouldn't have been fair, basically. Mm-hmm. But yes, that is the Raven from Raven.
We should talk about those kind of shows because they are.
We absolutely should.
I know someone who would done an Irish version of that. Two people from my class went on one called The Mountain, and they got mocked relentlessly for like 3 months because
it was
like we were all like 13 and stuff, so it was maybe too late to be going on those kind of shows, but.
The specific we actually should, because the specific era of like kids TV shows of this huge like kayfabe as well, mm-hmm. where it's like if you die in the game you die in real life. It's like in Raven, if you got hit by the like log flume that was made out of like polystyrene, you'd like and you like fell onto the like soft bark, you'd like go through like a portal and like get disintegrated. And they had stuff like Trapped as well, where it was like it was the Among Us of its time. Yeah, we'll do that as a, I think we should do that as a segment. That would be a very fun segment. But yeah, I also couldn't resist doing it because of course ravens are corvids. The most notable crokai I could find were the Yogan Notori, which is a prophecy bird. It's a two-headed black and white crow that like specifically warns of like impending disease, which I found interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the Yatagarasu, which is literally giant crow. It's just a massive three-legged crow that's associated with the sun. not all of them are especially like exotic sounding, you know. Like sometimes you just get to have a unit with three legs.
He's got a big fuck off crow that just looks like the sun, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Number six. A living umbrella with a single eye that hops around aimlessly, waiting to surprise passers-by with its long tongue.
That's a yokai, if I heard one, I think. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Phew.
That is in fact a yokai. This is a big excuse to go on a small tangent, so excuse me, indulge me this. So this description matches the Karakasa Obake, which translates to paper umbrella shapeshifter. Classic example of old objects given new life. Sometimes it's like wearing a pair of or a single old sandal because it's got just the one leg, and you know it's very tattered and it's hopping about. And yeah, it's one of those ones where it like doesn't, it just plays pranks on people. It doesn't like want to murder anyone violently or anything like some yokai do. Some of the stuff I've read, oh my god, it gets brutal. But the specific reason I wanted to bring this one up was because it's very prominent among the small cast of like yokai inspired monsters in Super Mario Land 2. That game was developed by like Nintendo R&D 1, who were like the Metroid and the Kid Icarus studio. They were a lot more experimental. I think they were responsible for designing like the Game Boy hardware as well. And they developed the original Mario Land, which is why that game feels like so strange. The physics are completely awful. The sprites are tiny. Like, it's a very short game. And then, you know, they do Mario Land 2 and they put Wario in, who's almost like their parody of Mario. And all the enemies are like still like they're getting closer to being like, quote unquote, on model with Mario. But like the enemies are still a little bit weird and they don't quite behave how you'd expect.
It's a witch, isn't it? It's like a witch. I'll tell you now, I'm looking at a poster of the artwork on my wall at the moment.
Yes.
So there's a witch. There's like a beetle. There's like...
Yeah.
There's all these different like... There's like a... kind of like an owl bird.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think most of the ones on the cover for the game are like the bosses, which are like, yeah, there's like three little pigs in houses that come out, or they come out of like cuckoo clocks and they roll around. So yeah, the Kaso Obake appears in that. It's just called, I think they just call it Karakara there, which is like, I think onomatopoeia for hopping around or rustling or something like that. There's also Kyororo, which is a little ogre boy with a single eye that like runs back and forth. I forget what that's based on. It's like, I remember the translation was like, literally just like small priest boy or something. It's the little ogre that runs around. There's the Mogyo as well, which was translated as the moo fish. And that's like a combination of a cow and a fish. And that's based on like a combination of the Rokugyo, which is like a chimera in the sea, and the Bitan, which is literally a fish cow hybrid. Also outside of the realm of yokai, there's like this little Dracula vampire guy that appears one time in the entire game. He has like custom sprites and everything, but he appears like right at the end of one of the levels and he sends little vampire bats after you. Incredibly, his original name is Kurokura. Or rather, Kurokura, which is a combination of Kuro, which is the Japanese word for black, and Dracula. So, Blackula.
It's essentially the translation.
Yeah. Bizarre. Kurokura, like, great stuff. And then there's also a little Goomba in a hockey mask that waddles around with a knife sticking out of its head, and it's literally just called Jason in the Japanese. Like, J and then son. J in like big emphasis. It's like fantastic. Love that kind of stuff. Okay, so we're on to the final one now. So all the beans in the can.
Here we go.
Okay. A tall purple biped that lives in the hills and can project visions of distant lands from a window in its stomach.
Well, I mean, look, this. This is modern folklore right here, because this is the taupe, I was gonna say the taupe, the twink, but he's not a twink. He's very much not a twink. But he's Tinky Winky.
He is indeed.
He is Tinky Winky, the Teletubby, and he's here to say, is it Eto? Is that what's it?
Eto.
Eto.
That is, yeah. Still got it. Still in touch with the kids of today.
Listen, I'm on top of everything, you know.
Didn't you do well?
Didn't I do well? Bruce Fortnite, as we found earlier on.
David found image of Bruce Forsyth that already said "keep gaming" on it, and then another one just that said Bruce Fortnite with like explosions that were animated at like a frame a second.
He's dropping them. I can describe to you now. It's a GIF where like he's holding two disco ball grenades. He drops one past a piece of text that says Bruce Fortnite, and then explodes, and his eyes turn red.
That's true. That's the important detail.
We will not be sued, hopefully, for the keep gaming one. We are, then, you know, it really was like discovering, you know, like in movies where it's like a turn on like the Chosen One, where like this person discovers, oh my god, like I'm reincarnated from like this person, like they look exactly like me. It was really like discovering like like evidence of that, finding the gift that said keep gaming was like, have we just been reformed from like some ancient attempt at this? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. Like, another one that like kind of I suppose it's more kind of Japanese folklore, kind of adjacent. Delphox, the
yes.
What you call it? The fire starter. The fire type starter, rather. Like it's so interesting. Like not to piggyback, but like how much folklore in general like seeds into like all this kind of stuff. Like just in general, like it's so interesting how these things are, you know, the genesis of all these things, how these things are like, you know, brought into being, and what like the not so much the purpose, but like what I suppose a purpose that was served by like those original legends. Like, you know, it's like when I was talking to that guy about for some reason I talked to a marine biologist about the Muckross Lake monster when I did that, and he made the point, like, you know, if you tell a child not to swim in the lake, they're not going to understand why they shouldn't swim in the lake, because, you know, for them it's like you're saying, well, you know, just don't do this. But if you say don't swim in the lake because there's a monster in there that will eat you if you swim in the lake, they're not gonna like, they won't go in. They're like, you know, they might want to see it, they might want to see like, well, that's so cool,
yeah,
but like they won't, like, you know, they won't go in because like they know, like, you know, there's something in there that's gonna like snap you up.
Yeah, so
like the whole, like, you know, origin of these, you know, bits of folklore, as well as that, like, it's a nice way to like kind of romanticize the banal and to like kind of give presence to, like, you know, feelings, or like, you know, a way of mourning, or like a way of grieving. So it's really interesting, and it's kind of interesting, like, as I said, how these kind of seep into pop culture and bring us stuff like, you know, a floating teapot or an orange lawnmower that floats. But I'm really happy I got is it 4 out of 6 that I got? I'm really happy.
I think you got 6 out of 7 in the end, because I think the only one you the rabbit that lives on the moon was the only one you didn't get.
Oh, well, you know what? You know, I'm trying to stay humble, but you know,
it was about a 50-50 yokai to nokai split. Like all the nokai I chose, I was like, I need to go like UK. Because for one thing it'll be funny, and for another, like, I can pretty much guarantee there won't have been like any kind of influence, unless it's just like parallel thinking.
Mr. Bobby especially was, you know, born from the evil mind of Nolan.
I thought that was a strong one to start with. Kind of set the tone. Yeah, there were some other ones I'd been thinking of. I was like trying to think if there was a way I could turn the Spice Girls into yokai, because there's a lot of yokai about like cursed women and stuff. But I was like, I don't know if there's a way I could like describe, you know, if I'm describing 5 women, I'm like, this one is very active and this one has a scary face. It's like, okay, well, you're obviously describing the Spice Girls. What else was there? Oh yeah, I was going to do Mr. Bean. I was trying to find a way to, I was going to be like, because there's a lot of like ogres and stuff in folklore, Tengu. There's like, oh, it's like a wordless ogre with a distinctive mole that terrorizes markets or something like that. And I was like, ah, I don't know. It's the... yeah, a lot of editing went into this anyway. It was very fun to actually put together a game, because yeah, they're always fun to listen to on Podter. And with that invocation of Podter, where else can we find the podcast, David? I am a small child who does not know.
Well, I have heard that there's a kind of a creature that lurks online. It's called an RSS feed. And it can be zoomed through different places, and different feeds can have stuff. It's all at Gamer Era Podcast. And there's me, FEWBAT, and there's you, which is
Sammy_Crow,
and there's at Noel Edmonds if you want to complain about Mr. Blobby.
You want him to come to your house?
Has Noel Edmonds has disappeared, hasn't he?
I don't know. I feel like I was hearing about a Deal or No Deal revival a few years ago, and I don't know if that just...
That is happening, I think, but it's with Stephen Mulhern, because it's Stephen Mulhern's like a cryptid that was invented to tell people about British TV.
Yeah. Stephen Mulhern.
Yeah. One of the most bland people alive. Like, genuine, like, the glass of nothing.
He will never be Brucey.
He will never be Brucey. I'm looking at Noel Edmonds News and
NoelEdmondsNews.com.
The top result for Noel Edmonds in the news tab is: "You are our enemies. Noel Edmonds in spat with council after moved to New Zealand." So Noel just moved to New Zealand, and
he got in a spat with the council. Good for him. Good for you too. Good night.